This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to hear the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And this hour is brought to you by our good friend Glenn Erickson and Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Because I'm not going to take any commercial breaks during this hour. I have four. It's so exciting always to have so many authors on. And so this is always an exciting time for me. This is what I call a relay interview, because this is a new book, an anthology by our good friend here at Joy on Paper, Lawrence Block, mystery writer of America Grandmaster, and he has put together another great anthology. Last time we did In Sunlight or in Shadow, and today is his newest anthology, At Home in the Dark. And, oh, wow. As always, he's pulled together a group of wonderful, wonderful authors, and I am so lucky that I have four of them with me today, Hillary Davidson, Wallace Strobe, Joel Lansdale, and Elaine Kagan. And so I'm going to be talking to them one after another without any commercial breaks. And I just want to, again, thank Lawrence so much for arranging this. As always, Larry is always just so wonderful to me. Whenever I can do anything for him, I'm happy to do it. And to promote this book is a wonderful opportunity for me and for all of you, because I love anthologies. Anthologies are really wonderful, wonderful gifts. If event is coming up, or some reason, a birthday or Father's Day, I'm not sure, or Mother's Day, an anthology. If you don't know what else to get somebody that you are giving a gift to, an anthology is perfect, because there's bound to be at least, half of them that the person you give the gift to will appreciate. And in this one, this book, I think you'll, if they love fiction, crime fiction, they will love this book. You know, there's a lot of different types of mysteries. There's those lovely, sweet, cozy mysteries where you just want to sit down and have a glass of milk and a chocolate chip cookie and just relax for a while. And then there are noir mysteries where maybe you want a glass of bourbon. But it is so exciting always to talk to authors, and particularly as I love mysteries, to talk to the authors today. And we're going to start today with Hillary Davidson. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, this is exciting, and a double excitement, because tomorrow you have a new release.
That's right. Yes, my fifth novel, One Small Sacrifice, will be released tomorrow from Thomas and Mercer. So thank you so much for mentioning that.
Okay. Well,
it's been a great spring, basically, because the anthology, just came out, and then the book's following up on that. So it's an exciting time for me. Thank you.
It is. And as you know, I extended an invitation. If you can come back on Thursday, we can talk about the new book.
I emailed you back, and that was so kind of you. I'd be absolutely delighted to. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, because today we'll talk about At Home in the Dark. Woo! It is a wild read. There are so much, to put it mildly. And as always, of course, Larry is such a wonderful person. And just for any of my listeners who don't know, although I'm always talking about him, because he's just so wonderful. And I had a chance to meet him when he was here at BoucherCon. It was wonderful.
That was such a great, I was in town for that conference too. And that was, I guess I've met Larry now several times over the years. And I can't believe that I'm referring to him as Larry, because I have been reading him since I was in high school. I absolutely idolize him. I adore his work. But I've also learned, since I became a crime writer myself, what an amazing person he is. think the first time I met him, we were at a crime fiction conference in Quebec, and he was just the most thoughtful, encouraging, warm, wonderful person. And I love that he's putting these anthologies together because he's really giving other writers an opportunity to showcase their work. So, you know, he is just a tremendous writer and human being, but he also loves helping other writers too.
Exactly. That's why I like that he does these anthologies. You're right. They're writing short stories is a real art, and it is a real training ground for an author. And to have the opportunity to have somebody like Larry select you for an anthology is a great honor and a great opportunity to get your name out there.
Exactly. I felt honestly when the morning that I woke up and found his email inviting me to be in this collection, I honestly felt like I'd won the lottery. Like there was a little bit in my back of my mind where I thought, I don't know, maybe my husband is pranking me or something like that because he knows this would be a dream come true. But no, really, like he does also such a great job with the collections that he's done as well. Like even though, like you said in your intro, there's a very wide range in terms of the stories and what they cover, you know, very different themes and very different styles and sort of experimental storytelling techniques. He pulls it together in each collection, so it works really beautifully. And I think there's always something interesting. You know, you get pulled into one world with one story, and then you're all, you know, up for something completely different in the next one. But they work actually quite beautifully. In this case, I know he wanted a very dark kind of noir theme. You know, I mean, calling it At Home in the Dark, I guess, suggests that. But he wanted stories that were sort of on the darker edge of the spectrum. And, you know, I guess I got to read the collection, the entire thing, maybe a couple of months before it came out or 3 months before it came out. And just you sort of, it's amazing the different directions people can go in.
Well, he definitely got what he was looking for, and as he explains in the book, that he got the title from O. Henry's last words, which were, mm-hmm. "Turn up the lights, I don't want to go home in the dark." And, of course, yes. Everybody knows that O. Henry always had surprise endings. And so, boy, some of them really surprise you. And so it's a wonderful collection. Why it's so important when somebody, you know, like Larry selects an author for an anthology. He is so highly respected in the writing world. Not only is he a Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, he's won 4 Edgars and I think 4 Seamus and I don't know how many Falcons. You know, I could go for an hour just listing all of his awards. And of course, he sold over the years so many books and so many best-selling books. So, and he has, you know, these wonderful, wonderful series that are just, I know he writes in the beginning of this one, in the intro to the anthology, he writes about the word iconic. But really, he has, you know, his books are, in many ways, the characters that he has developed over the years are iconic. And he has these wonderful series like Matthew Scudder, Barney Rodebacher, who else? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God. There's also
Evan Michael Tanner.
Tanner, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And Keller.
There was a couple of books.
Yeah, so, you know, these books are just, wow, people know them and love them, and so it is a great honor to be selected by him. And, of course, right. Your story. Wow. Tell us about how you came out with the idea for Cold Comfort, and tell us what you want to tell people about it, but don't give away any surprise endings.
No spoilers. Well, the first thing, and I have to admit, and this honestly just sort of follows what you were just saying, when you're asked by Lawrence Block to write a story for an anthology he's editing, the pressure is on. you know you better bring your A game. You know you've got to be doing, you know, something really special, something really strong and different. Like really, like you're trying to do your best work. So I am not going to lie, I felt a tremendous amount of pressure working on the story. And I think I did altogether 12 different drafts of it, like 12 entirely different drafts, because, I'd normally like to rewrite. I mean, I would never just write a story and hand it in, but that was sort of unusual to sort of get that level of intensity for a short story. But part of it is because it's a little bit of a complicated story. At the beginning, you actually know the facts of the murder. You know that there's a young woman who's been murdered by her abusive husband. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, the police, basically, they know the when, they know the why. But sort of on the periphery of that, you have the woman's family and their family priest, with whom they have a very complicated relationship. And as the story unfolds, you see the way that he's sort of influenced each player in this tragedy and sort of the imprint of his manipulation, I'll call it, on the family. So, you know, while it doesn't take any responsibility away from the husband for killing the wife, you see sort of through a different lens, like what has actually transpired. So I know there, I'm only going so far into
that's
the story.
It. We're not going to go. We're not going to go any further.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Yeah. But it does mean that even though you know a lot of facts at the beginning, the ending is still quite a shocker. I hope. Anyway,
it is. It is. I assure you, it is. Well, Hillary, I'm not going to talk to you much longer because I'm going to have you back here on Thursday, which is great. And so I want to give.
That is so delightful. Yes. Thank you so much, Cassie. I look forward to that now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to go to Wallace Strobe, okay? And I'll talk to you on Thursday.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, whoa. Now, I love Wallace Strobe. I've been thinking back on my last call with him, so I just want to say, hi, Wallace. Oh, he's going to be here in a minute. So, yeah, it was wonderful to be at BoucherCon, and I didn't meet Hillary then, but I am so happy that she's going to be on here on Thursday. And her new book is called One Small Sacrifice, Shadows of New York, and it is a fascinating book. And now I have Wallace. Hi, Wallace. How are you?
Hi. How are you, Patsy?
Oh, great. It's so nice to talk to you again. Now, it was nice to see you at BoucherCon, and I was looking at your the name of your story in the new book, the new anthology is I was looking at it, I said it's called Nightbound, and I thought, yeah. You know, sometimes when I look at your titles, I'm always remembering that you have one of the best book titles ever, Shoot the Woman First. I'll never forget the first time I saw that book. I said, "Oh my gosh, this guy is brilliant! I love that. I love that title."
And well, thank you.
And the premise is so good because you're right. People have to go and read that book to find out why you have that title. So everybody, you can read Wallace's story, which is in this new book. At Home in the Dark. It's called Nightbound. That's a very easy title. After you read this anthology, go and get this book. Shoot the Woman First. You'll never forget that title. And the book is really, really good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a funny title because, it was the third in the series about a female professional thief named Chris Stone. And I think if you didn't know that context, the title might throw you a little bit,
but
it's explained in the course of the book.
It is. Don't explain
women in the men's world.
I want people to read that book because I think. Well, first of all, the Chris Stone series is wonderful, and I get such a kick out of that book. I love that title so much, and I actually sometimes judge people, cleverness by the title, and that has to be one of the very best.
So
how are you? Well, you're always so busy.
And thanks to Larry for inviting me into this anthology. As Hillary was saying, you get an invitation from Lawrence Block to contribute, and you want to be on your best behavior. In my case, I had written four books about Chris Stone, a female professional thief, and then I wrote a standalone for Mulholland called Some Die Nameless, which just came out over the summer. But I had been playing around with an idea for a short story about her. And I probably had it, you know, I was tinkering with it. I would go back to it every once in a while. And then I had it probably 60% written when Larry invited me to contribute a story, and the parameters were pretty wide open. You know, just it needed to be dark. So that was a little bit of serendipity, because I thought, now, okay, this is now the impetus to finish this story and to sort of revisit her and her character again, which was a lot of fun to do.
Well, your philosophy is sort of simple plot, complex characters, and
yeah.
That, you know, you always are able to create a fascinating story. And when you finish this one, did you say, whew, that's good?
Thanks. It was sort of an experiment, and I told Larry this when I submitted it to him. I wanted to see how much I could cut down exposition in a story, but still have it make sense, where the reader could follow it, that they knew what was happening, but you weren't stopping to explain anything. And so it's essentially an extended chase. It begins with a robbery, and then Krissa flees, and the whole thing takes place in about 7 hours while she's trying to stay alive overnight in a dark area of Brooklyn in the middle of the night. And so she's just trying to get by while she's being chased by the people that she robbed. So I wanted to try and set it up very, very quickly. And then, boom, you're in the middle of it and you're following her. And at no point, you know, is there context or do you stop or backstory or anything? It's just boom, 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 boom.
There's
so
tension.
It was a little bit of an experiment.
Yeah, you build up the tension in this story.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully, you know, it's tricky sometimes. There can be too much and there can be too little. You know, you kind of have to find a sweet spot that doesn't alienate the reader, where they can follow along. But at the same time, you're not stopping the story or slowing the story down to explain things.
Well, you know, of course, Larry is listening today, so I was trying to think of what could we say about him. Oh, there's so many.
Oh, I'm sure his ears are burning.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful things we can say about him. As Hillary said, the fact that he always wants to help other writers and that he's really generous with his time. So,
yes.
Tell us, when did you meet him? How did you get involved with Larry Block?
Well, first of all, you know, in my formative years, I read everything of his, including, you know, all the Scudder books I read in my early 20s, probably back to back, you know, and those were just wonderful. You know, he stopped writing about that character for a while, and then he picked it up again, and then...
And he did a beautiful job with it. Oh.
Yeah, and with that second tier, when he went back to that character, those, you know, some of those books are really, really great. You know, Dance at the Slaughterhouse, Walk Among the Tombstones. And one of my favorites is The Devil Knows You're Dead. And so I always read him, you know, for years. I read everything of his. And I think I met him, I think I interviewed him years and years and years ago when I was working at newspapers, and I did something, a brief thing that he was part of. And then I sent him a copy of the first Krissa book. I got his address from someone. Which was called Cold Shot to the Heart, and I mailed it to him with a little note that said, you don't have to read this, you don't even have to open it, but this book is everything I learned from you and Donald Westlake and some other people. And so I mailed that book to him, and then never heard anything. And then about 2 months later, I got an email back from him, and that said, I didn't have to read it, huh? He had me on the first page. And at that point, I thought, okay, I can actually do this. I know how to do this. So Larry's been a tremendous source of inspiration to me. And the fact he, you know, he's always busy. He's always keeping going. He's always doing new stuff. And he's always looking for a new horizon. I admire that incredibly.
Well, when he came out with the newest one, A Time to Scatter Stone, you know, after being away from that character for so long, he just, he came back really powerful.
Yeah, you're right back in that world. When I read that, I thought the same thing. It was, like, nice to be back in that world, dark and threatening as it sometimes is.
It is. Now, you know, it's always so wonderful when I'm talking to an author and I think about just that moment when you, like what you said, when you get this kind of help from somebody who gives you that encouragement, and that is so important. I was talking to an author last week, and I think at some point he was getting down on, like, I don't know how I'm doing. And I was so happy that I really loved his book and I could tell him that. And afterwards I got an email from him and he said, whoa, that made me feel good. I need that. And sometimes people don't realize that it's so important. Authors, you know, spend so much time alone with their characters,
yes.
But
yeah.
They need that. I think that's why, for example, I discovered when I went to BoucherCon 2018, it was my first one, and to see the fans, how they were so really grateful to the authors for writing books that have taken them away from their problems or given them some joy. And that's why, you know, it's really so important that writers meet fans, and so great when fans will reciprocate and will write nice reviews or will, you know, come to these kind of events.
Yeah, it's a very solitary life, so it's great to, you know, to get feedback from people, because you're working in a vacuum for a lot of the time, you know, in between drafts, and, you know, you're not talking with your editor every day generally, you know, sometimes it's weeks or months in between. So it can be very solitary. As far as readers, go back to Larry for a second. Larry said something once that I have never forgotten, and I have imprinted it on my mind. He said, a good book can get somebody through a couple bad nights. And that always stuck with me, because, you know, he is absolutely right. And that's sort of the job, you know. And I've had that experience myself. I'm sure everybody has, where you're in a stressful period of time, and being able to lose yourself in a book that just sweeps you away is a gift.
That's true. I've heard from so many. I ask my listeners, like, what book has made a difference in your life? And so often I've heard from people who said, you know, I was in a hospital. I was waiting for something, you know, a result of a test. I was waiting for the result of a surgery. And for a little while, I was reading, and I calmed down. It just helped me to get away for a little while. And so that's why it's so wonderful when an author really can connect with a reader.
Yeah, it's you know, it's this sounds a little pretentious, but, you know, the purpose of art, you know, all kinds of art, writing, painting, whatever, films, the message of art is you are not alone. And I think, you know, when it's done well, I think then you know, when you engage with it, you feel part of something that's bigger than yourself, something that can actually be codified and shared with people. And that can sometimes, you know, make a huge difference in people's lives. You know, books really do save lives. They really can.
Okay. You know, As I said, it's always fun to do these relay interviews. And in a little while, I'm going to be talking to Joe Lansdale about his.
Now, legendary Joe Lansdale.
Yeah, he definitely is. And he has, now he has a fancy title for his story, The Senior Girls Bayonet Drill Team.
Yeah. Well, Joe refuses to be classified in any particular genre. And he's written in all of them, and he's brilliant at all of them.
Well, I'm going to talk to him next, but as always, whenever you have a book, you have to let me know, and I want you on the release date, okay?
I will. Thank you very much.
Okay, wait, one moment. And your what is your webpage for people who want to?
www.wallacestrobe.com.
Okay, everyone, go there and get his book. Oh, I just love it. I just love it. Okay. And I'll talk to you soon. I'm sure you'll have another book coming out soon. Okay?
Hopefully, yes.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thanks very much, Beth.
Okay, bye, Wallace. Now I'm going to turn to Joe Lansdale. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, fantastic. Wow. I've been having so much fun talking first to Hillary, then to Wallace, and now to you. And as it was...
Exciting morning.
It is. This is a relay. I do a relay here for Larry. For every time he comes out with an anthology, I'd like to do these little relay interviews. Wow. I love the title of your story, the senior girls bayonet drill team.
Thank you.
I was telling Wallace, I love the title of one of his books, Shoot the Woman First, but this is a pretty good title, too.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's always fun to work for Larry, you know, because he gives you such interesting scenarios to play off of, you know.
Well, of course, everyone knows you as the author of the Hap and Leonard series, and the last book, The Elephant of Surprise, was also a great title.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I loved it. As a matter of fact, I loved the intro. I was one of the funny things when you said you wrote something there. The mean librarian wagging her finger at a loud child. that reminded me of, I don't know, in libraries now people are different, but in my, you know, when we were younger, we did have that one librarian who was,
yes,
she would wear a shirtwaist dress, she would probably little pearl earrings, she was always watching you could never get move without her.
That's true. Yeah, you know, I had a librarian very much like that, but I also she was someone who led me toward all kinds of books that I might not have read, all kinds of books that gradually developed into the kinds of novels and stories and films and etc. that I've written or been involved with, and so I have to thank that finger-wagging librarian.
Well, I know, and I had the same thing, but with me, I think she always appreciated those of us who appreciated books, because she
yes.
would let me sneak out of the children's. I would leave the children's room, because I went right through. I started in the children's room. I started at A and just went around the thing. So she let me sneak in and climb up the winding staircase up to the stacks,
to the darker adult, regions,
the adult, where the adult books were, and so that's where I started reading Zola.
Well, you know, that's funny because my librarian did exactly the same. You know, she the children's room. I read a large number of things in there, but she could tell that I was kind of dissatisfied at some point, and so she allowed me to do just like that. You know, to be involved in reading more adult work and things of that nature at a younger age because I was ready for it. So I appreciate that too.
Oh yeah, librarians can do a lot of good. I can tell you, they can really steer kids in the right direction. So I love it. Wow. So tell us about this senior girls band drill team.
Well, you know, the weird thing is that the germ of that story has been with me for 15, 20 years or something, but I never could find the right vehicle for telling it. I mean, I knew it would have this dystopian flavor, but I never could quite figure how I wanted to approach the story and tell it. And I decided that slightly off stage about what was going on was the best way to do it. I mean, you know what's going on through the dialogue and through the observations of the narrator, but the idea of how we get so wrapped up in sports and how sports become very much like a religion for many people has always struck me as both fascinating, interesting, and somewhat confusing. And so for me, I thought this was a way to approach that, and I thought it was also a way to approach that whole idea that we have about drill teams and cheerleaders and et cetera, and put it into a somewhat, I think you could say, darker context.
Oh, yeah, I would say darker. So, wow, you know, I thought it was really pretty dark.
It is pretty dark and in its own way. And I think one of the things that I enjoyed doing was writing a story where the darkness seeps through the cracks in the story without it just actually pulling the boards up and letting you see the whole thing. And I thought that was actually, a little bit more interesting. And there are little bits of nods there that this may not be Earth, that this may be somewhere else. It's just a couple of lines thrown in. That it could be, Mars. It could be some place that's been terraformed, some place that's been corrected, so to speak. And I didn't play on that too much because I wanted the reader to be able to fill it in themselves and decide where it was or what it was. And actually, I've written it, I hope, in a way that no matter what you think about it, you walk away with some feelings of satisfaction, but also some feelings of mystery, some unanswered questions, which, in fact, I think are what make the story interesting to me, is that all of the questions about how and why and where are not answered.
Well, I think it's a great story, and so different from Happen Leonard.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I also wrote Bubba Hotep and a number of other things like that, too, which couldn't be farther from Happen Leonard, and I've always done that. I've always felt that when I was a kid and I wanted to be a writer, my idea was I wanted to do it because I thought it was fun. And so when I got into writing, I made a kind of pact with myself, is that I would write the stuff that mattered to me, not necessarily try to chase, you know, I wanted to have success enough to do it full time, which I've had. And I've certainly done some pay the bills work, which I think I have done well. But I've always been in pursuit of my own little dream from the time I was 4 years old and wanted to write. And I pretty much managed to do that. I mean, I'm someone who gets up happily ready to work. I'm not burned out. I'm not, you know, wishing I had chosen a different profession. And this is exactly what I wanted to do, and I got what I wanted. And I think that sometimes that can be a curse, but in my case, it was like a dream come true.
Well, you are so amazing. And, I love listening to your voice. Nacogdoches, you know, we lived in Texas for a long time, and of course, your voice just sounds so down home. I just love it.
Yeah, well, it's the only one I got.
Well, it's nice. Well, you have accomplished so much. Yeah, of course, I can mention some of your awards, but you've won so many. Of course, the 9 Bram Stoker Awards. I think it's still. Nine.
You know, it's actually 10.
Ten. It is 10.
Yeah. Okay. But who's counting, right?
Well, that's all right. I'm sure it'll be an even dozen pretty soon. And of course, the British Fantasy Award, which is an unusual, that's, you know, from going to Happen Leonard to British Fantasy is pretty darn good. And of course, I mean, goodness gracious. Yeah, you know, I always talk to authors and they're always dreaming about, you know, that. Well, first they're happy when they write a book, and then they're always dreaming about, well, will it, you know, ever get picked up? Will it ever be you know, turned into a movie? You know, and of course you've done very well in that department.
Yeah, I have. But I also live in fear that it will get picked up, you know, because you never know what they're going to do. I have been so fortunate so far, which means that I guess I'm overdue for the big shoe to drop. But all of the things of mine that, you know, I even wrote Batman the Animated Series, which was based on, you know, the show itself, Batman, and they would give us a sort of outline idea. This is what we want. Can you write a script about this? But I wrote the scripts, and they pretty much shot them the way I wrote them, or animated them the way I visualized them. I was fortunate in that Bubba Hotep it went from being a cult film to sort of like a classic film. It shows all the time. And Cold in July, a crime film, I loved it too. They did a good job. The Happen Leonard series, you know, they had it for 3 seasons, and it was just great. Purefoy and Michael K. Williams were wonderful as Happen Leonard. I mean, you know, all writers, no matter what, you have beasts because you're the writer. You wrote the work, and there's certain things you would like to see, or you say, well, why did they change that line or whatever. But overall, I feel like I have just had the best, interpretation that you can imagine. Now, I have a lot of other things that have been under option with different directors and producers and writers for years that have never been made, and some of those might be made and become something that I wished had not been made. But on the other hand, you know, if you sign the contract and cash the check, you're pretty much obligated to accept what they do, maybe not always with great comfort, but so far, so good. So we'll see what happens in the future. There are several things scheduled, including one that I hope to direct myself.
Ah, that's the then you'll do it, get it right.
I hope so. Well, that's the thing. At least you can't blame anybody else. I remember Stephen King did Maximum Overdrive, and he wasn't happy with his directing. But, you know, at least you can say, hey, it's me, it's not somebody else, you know.
Well, they certainly have wonderful material to use with you.
Well, thanks.
Everything is fantastic. Yeah, and I think you're the only person I know who actually developed his own martial art system. You have to tell us about that. We have a few minutes before I'm going to go on to Elaine Kagan. But tell us about this.
Well, I started, my dad was did some boxing and wrestling enough to give me some background in that. And then I went over into judo and hapkido, and then later aikido and kempo and Thai boxing. All those things over the years I had managed to take. And I always seemed to be in the right place at the right time. In East Texas, the YMCA had these people that would come to the university, or well, the college, then it was a two-year college, and they would bring these different arts. I got to study them. And at one point when I was, I started teaching, and my students started saying, well, you're not really teaching this or that or this. And eventually the stuff was recognized by the International Martial Arts Hall of Fame and the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And my own system developed out of it called Shin Chuan, which means spirit fist. But again, it's not a grab bag of things. It's a kind of blending of a number of arts. And I've been doing it now. I believe this is 56 years this October.
Wow. Wow. I think it's wonderful because, you
know. Well, I've loved it. I've really enjoyed doing it all my life. And I've taught a lot of people. And I've been involved with a lot of great martial artists. So it's been a wonderful sideline to my life. But I treat it just the same way as I do writing, seriously.
Yeah, well, I was a kickboxer for many years.
I did that too.
I was doing kickboxing before it became popular because I love that feeling. And you don't really feel like you're exercising or doing something healthy. You're just like kicking.
That's right. That's why because I never really, you know, I never was really sports oriented in the classic sense. I didn't care about team sports, but I like the competition of the other. And then, of course, now that I'm older, I just teach. I know, you know, I quit taking falls and punches and things like that a few years ago. But I still teach. I have students. I have private classes. I love doing it. I'm going to do it as long as I'm able.
Well, I think you're fantastic. I am so happy that you joined us today. And
Thank you so much.
I know that Larry will be listening. And let's say, what wonderful thing do you want to say about him?
Larry, well, man, he's a legend. I mean, he really is. He's one of those guys who in many ways has helped me understand my own career, because you learn from those people in front of you. And I'm sort of on the tail end of the writers like Larry and Westlake and people like that, who we wrote a lot because back then you had to. And you also had a number of places where you could sell books, paperbacks, hardbacks. You could write under other names, which I did minimally. But, you know, I was kind of on the tail end of that transition into what we think of as the modern publishing, which I think really started kind of showing its face in the 80s more than any other time. And gradually it developed into what it is now, both good and bad. So to me, they were spirit guides in a way. And also they wrote some fantastic work.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, I want to thank you so much for being on today. And what is your website?
Well, actually, it's probably, I have a fan page, and it's just Joe R. Lansdale.
Okay.
You know, you can find that.
Well, everybody
just look,
can find,
you know, just go to Facebook, but it's not a Facebook page per se. It's a fan page. But I also have www.joerlansdale.com. Which is a website.
Okay, and they can get the newest book, The Elephant of Surprise. And perhaps you could come back and we could talk about that book one day, okay?
Of course.
I'd love to.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and now I'm going to talk to Elaine Kagan. So bye-bye, Joe. Hi, Elaine. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Oh, wow. It's so nice to talk to you.
I feel the same way. It's very exciting.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I think that, I was really happy when Larry sent me the book and when I got the list of the people who would participate. And I thought, whoo, I think it's pretty great to be talking to Elaine Kagan. I mean, I've seen you like a zillion times on every... people might not realize that you're also an actress, and
I seem to be semi-retired.
Well, I don't know.
Not by choice.
Well, you know, you live on. The wonderful thing about, if I could go back, I would actually want to be an actress. Now, which is very funny because I was very shy until I started this radio program.
You'd rather be an actress than a writer?
Well, no. I think I love the idea that you're going to go on and on and on in repeats forever.
People
are going to see you over and over. And I know that now that I've mentioned it, people will wonder what some of the programs you have been on. Of course, I know Law and Order, L.A., and CSI, and what else? Where have I seen you?
I've seen ER and NYPD Blue. Yes, a lot of wonderful television I had guest stars. But I guess the best thing for me was I had some small parts in some really big movies, Coming to America and Goodfellas. You know, that was, you know, those are the ones that, you know, it's so interesting what you said, because for me, the writing is me alone in front of this computer screen. It used to be the white paper in a Selectric typewriter, right? But acting is you're surrounded by an entire company. So you're not alone at all. You know, when you're doing your part, there's a gaffer over there and a grip over there and the director and the other actors. And so it's a total other thing. You know, the writing is kind of alone and the acting is surrounded. So if I can have both, then it's really the best of
all
worlds.
Well, you're definitely having both now, because you are doing really one book after another. You've done some really great books. I wanted to say that the one, No Goodbyes, I like that. Having I used to write scripts.
Right.
So, and I had a little bit of experience in Hollywood. Not enough, or maybe too much.
Right.
And there's a reason that I am now on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of California. So I must admit, I do like life here much better. I don't have the personality for Hollywood. So it's wonderful. And of course, now I have the perfect job. I get to talk to authors. And it is so exciting, you know, always for me. And I was pleasantly surprised, as I said, when I saw that you were in the new anthology, and just wondered about your story and how you came out with it. And tell us about
it. I had done, I did a story for Larry's other collection. I don't know if you interviewed Dark City Lights a few years ago. I met Larry when I wrote my first book, The Girls, which was kind of a, you know, crazy exciting thing, because when my first book got published, I was 50 years old. We won't do the math.
No.
But I met Larry and Walter Mosley in Pittsburgh, signing books in a big hall, and we stayed friends ever since, which is so wonderful. He's a very inspiring, and he's always been so, just so responsive to my work and encouraging, and I don't think I would still be writing if it wasn't for Larry Block. You know, he just will call and say, write me a story. I need a story. I need it by this. And I say, well, wait a minute. I don't know if I can do it. I say, oh, don't be silly, Elaine. So, you know, I just have done it. This particular story, just for me, kind of came out of nowhere. And it is, of course, because of the whole Me Too horrible mess. But the reason, I don't know, it just seemed to me I was kind of, as an actress and a writer, there was something about the actresses all dressed up in black at the Golden Globes that, in a way, just made me angry, as if they could understand what a waitress in Denny's in the middle of the night may have to contend with, you know, with the cook or the manager or somebody pushing her up against the wall. And I just kind of started. And the part of the story that has to do with her dad and dementia is something I'm dealing with my best girlfriend in New York. So watching someone fade into that, which is hideously sad, has been in my mind, and so I tried to weave, you know, that into the story. And so that's how it came out. I said to Noreen Ayers, sorry, who has a story in the book. She wrote me after she read my story, and I did write her, and I said, you know, I thought in my own life, being a secretary long before I was a writer, taking shorthand and typing and working at agencies all over Beverly Hills, you know, and if you were cute, you were always getting pushed up against the Xerox machine. So I said to her, you know, I thought when Xerox machines were out of date, maybe this would stop, but of course it hasn't. And so that, I don't know, it kind of all came together for me. I wrote this story really fast. It just, like, hit me, and I just sat here for days and, you know, got obsessed with it.
Well, the part, as you mentioned, the part about Alzheimer's, dealing with Alzheimer's, I thought you wrote so touchingly. It was really very moving.
Thank you.
And of course, the title of this one is Hot Pants.
Right.
Which I love that title, too. I thought that was a great title. Well, you know, it's always so wonderful when somebody like Larry is encouraging and is generous with his time.
Yeah.
and helps authors. And all of this is an opportunity. As I always tell people, if you're looking for a gift to buy someone, you're not sure what they're going to like, buy an anthology. Because what it does, there's always some story, at least one, but usually many more, that you like,
and
that you're intrigued by, and you're intrigued by the author's writing. And then they, from just reading one short story, you'll say, I need to read what this author has written. I need to read more. And
well, yes, you can go to the Amazon. My books are so old that they're probably only $1.20.
Well, you know, that's a wonderful thing about art in general, but definitely the art of being an actress or being a writer is that, and with Amazon now, it is true that your books live on too, so
right,
you know, good or bad, but they do live on, and it's wonderful that people have this opportunity to go back. And I'm sure when people read your story, they will be intrigued by your writing. And as I said I was touched by just the first page there, as you're talking about the dad. I thought, oh, this is, you know, even if I hadn't already read, for example, No Goodbyes, I would know that I'm interested in this writer. I would like to know more how this author is thinking. So I'm really so happy that I have had this opportunity to talk to you.
And, oh, thank you.
You know, do you have a new book? Are you working on a new book?
Oh, yes. I started a new book, and for me, this is a big deal because I haven't had a book in the stores for, like, I don't know, 15, 16 years. So for me, I had written, five were published, three William Morrow and two Knopf. And then I wrote a sixth book, and, you know, I was getting replies, or the agent was getting replies, like, Elaine is really wonderful, and we love it, and she makes us cry and laugh, and after about five of those, I thought, pull it. And then I just really stopped. So for me to now start a new book is daring and a challenge, and it's kind of exciting. I'm trying to incorporate a man and a woman in their dance in the middle of Los Angeles and everything that goes on here with immigration and domestic violence. It's a comedy. No, I'm kidding. So that's what I'm trying to do. So it's the first time I've tried to incorporate what's going on in a city or in the country, but in the city with everything that's happening.
Well, you stick to it. I don't have much time, but I want to tell you, as I said, for everyone, if they get this book At Home in the Dark and they read Hot Pants, when they read that first page, and you're writing about the Alzheimer's with such care, such in a few words, you are able to create such emotion. I was so touched by it. And I thought, wow, I want to read more. And so you really stick to it. I want you here as soon as possible for the release date of your new book. And I'm sure it will be great. You have amazing talent. Few people could write that first page. I'm just telling you, that first page right there, just it's like a calling card that says.
And then Elaine put it in the as the first story.
Yeah, that's what. I said, Elaine, you know, Elaine Kagan is a talent. And that's what I said to myself the minute I read that. And I already knew you were talented because I had read No Goodbyes because of the Hollywood connection. So
right,
I'm going
to
have you back here within a year. I want you published and right back here on Joy on Paper.
I'd be thrilled to do it anytime.
Okay. All right. Thank you again, Elaine, for being on Joy on Paper. It's a joy to talk to you. And it's always a joy to see you in a repeat on one of the
one of the shows.
Okay.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Elaine.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Isn't it nice? Is she nice? I like her. I really like her. Well, really, watch. You can look. You can look her up, and you can see her picture. But you'll recognize her because you'll see. You've seen her. You've seen her. She has like on IMDb. She has a list of all the programs that she's been in. It's like I must run like 5 pages.
I wonder if she wrote any books about some of the people that she's worked with, like big names, like
she doesn't use the real
name. Robert De Niro, Clint Eastwood.
Ed, she changes the names to protect the not so innocent. But her books, yeah, actually, you can play that game if you read like No Goodbyes. You say, okay, who is that really? Who is that really? It's like a mystery game. And you try to match them up because she really, yes. She has definitely put, I recognize some of the characters in her stories. She's wonderful. She's delightful. Okay, well, as I tell everyone this, I really went fast. I want to thank again Glenn Erickson and Larson & Larson so that I didn't stop and interrupt them for commercials. It was really kind of them to let me do this. And, you know, there are times that you just, it's like when I interviewed Juan Felipe Herrera, the poet laureate, I couldn't stop in the middle of an interview with the poet laureate and say, okay, I have to do my pillow commercial. Now, I'm sure he would like it. And as a matter of fact, you can use my code on my pillow. It's Patzi, P-A-T-Z-I. It's easy to remember. And they always have great pillows, and that's all you need to do is use P-A-T-Z-I. Remember, one of the things I tell you always, always is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really, really lucky, wow, like some people are, you will see your book turned into a film, a streaming video, a television series. You never know. And I just want to tell everyone again, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room who got all these people on the phone for me. It was lots of fun. And a special thanks to Lawrence Block, Mystery Writer of America, Grandmaster, for arranging this wonderful, wonderful interview. And bye-bye, everyone.